Blandings Castle basked in the afterglow of a golden summer evening. But to Ronnie Fish, slumped in an armchair in his bedroom on the second floor, the improved weather conditions brought no spiritual uplift. In asking Millicent to marry him, he had gone, he now definitely realized, too far. He groaned in spirit and became aware that he was no longer alone. The door had opened, and his friend Hugo Carmody was in the room. He noted with a dull surprise that Hugo was in the conventional costume of the English gentleman about to dine. "Hello," said Hugo. "Not dressed. The gong's gone." "I don't want any dinner." "No dinner?" "No." "Oh. Ill or something?" "No." "But you don't want any dinner?" "I see." "Oh, rummy. However, your affair, of course. It begins to look as if I should have to don the nose bag alone. Beach tells me that Baxter also will be absent from the trough. He's upset about something, it seems, and has asked for a snort and sandwiches in the smoke room. As for the pustule Pillbeam, said Hugo grimly, I propose to interview him at the earliest possible date, and after that he won't want any dinner either. Where are the rest of them? Well, don't you know, said Hugo, surprised. They're dining over at Old Parsloe's. Your aunt, Lord Emsworth, Old Galahad and Millicent. He coughed. A moment of slight embarrassment impended. I say, Ronnie, old man, while on the subject of Millicent, well, you know that engagement of yours. What about it? It's off. Off? Right off. A washout. She's changed her mind. What? Yes, she's going to marry me. She asked me to break it to you gently that in the circus she proposes to return you to store. A thrill of ecstasy shot through Ronnie. He felt as men on the scaffold feel when the messenger bounds in with a reprieve. Well, that's the first bit of good news I've had for a long time, he said. You mean you didn't want to marry Millicent? Of course I didn't. Look, not so much of the of course, laddie, said Hugo, offended. Well, I mean, she's an awfully nice gal, an angel, Shropshire's leading seraph. But I'm not in love with her any more than she's in love with me. Well, in that case, said Hugo, with justifiable censure, why propose to her? A goofy proceeding, it seems to me. And now, I suppose, you've fixed up again with Sue. I haven't. You haven't, said Hugo, damped. That Ronnie could possibly be in ignorance of Sue's arrival at the castle never occurred to him. Long ere this, he took it for granted they must have met. I think you're being very hard on that poor little girl, Ronnie. Look, don't call her poor little girl. Look, I will call her a poor little girl, said Hugo firmly. And I must say, I should have thought, I don't want to talk about her. After doing what she's done, I don't want to talk about her, I tell you. Hugo sighed. He gave it up. The situation was what they call an impasse. Too bad. His best friend and a dear little girl like that parted forever. Well, I'll be pushing off. I'm late. Sure you won't come down to dinner? Then I'll be going. It is imperative that I get hold of Pillbeam with all possible speed. Don't want the sun to go down on my wrath. All has ended happily in spite of him, but that's no reason why he shouldn't be massacred. I look on myself as a man with a public duty. For some minutes after the door had closed, Ronnie remained humped in the chair. Then, in spite of everything, there began to creep upon him a desire for food too strong to be resisted. Fond as he was of Hugo, he simply could not stand his conversation tonight. A chop at the Emsworth Arms would meet the case. He rose. His mind, as he moved to the door, was not entirely occupied with thoughts of food. Hugo's parting words had turned it in the direction of Pillbeam again. Pillbeam, the cause of all his troubles. Pillbeam, the snake in the grass. Pillbeam, yes. His heart might be broken, his life a wreck, but he could still enjoy the faint consolation of dealing faithfully with Pillbeam. He went out into the corridor, and as he did so, Percy Pillbeam came out of the room opposite. Pillbeam had dressed for dinner with considerable care. Owing to the fact that Lord Emsworth, in his woolen-headed way, had completely forgotten to inform him of the exodus to Matchingham Hall, he was expecting to meet a gay and glittering company at the meal, and had prepared himself accordingly. Looking at the result in the mirror, he had felt a glow of contentment. This glow was still warming him as he passed into the corridor. As his eyes fell on Ronnie, it faded abruptly. He was a man who found no pleasure in physical violence, and that physical violence threatened now was only too sickeningly plain. Reaching behind him for the handle, and twisting it sharply, he slipped through the door of his bedroom, banged it, and was gone. A rasping cry proceeded from Ronnie Fish, witnessing this masterly withdrawal. For an instant, he was completely taken aback. Then he plunged for the door and plunged into the room. He stood baffled. Pillbeam had vanished. To Ronnie's astonished eyes, the apartment appeared entirely free from detectives in any shape or form whatsoever. How long this miracle would have continued to afflict him, one cannot say. His mind was still dealing dazedly with it when there came to his ears a sharp click, as of a key being turned in the lock. It seemed to proceed from a hanging cupboard at the other side of the room. Springing forward, he tugged at the handle of the cupboard door. The door stood fast. At the same moment, there filtered through it the sound of muffled breathing. "Come out of that!" The breathing stopped. "All right," said Ronnie, with a hideous calm. "Right jolly ho! I can wait." For some moments there was silence. Then, from the beyond, a voice spoke in reply. "Be reasonable!" "Reasonable," said Ronnie thickly. "Come out! I only want to pull your head off." The voice became conciliatory. "I know what you're upset about," it said. "Oh, you do, eh? Yes, I quite understand, but look, I can explain everything." "What?" "I say I can explain everything." "You can you?" "About that night at Mario's, I mean. I know exactly how it is. You think Miss Brown is fond of me. I give you my solemn word, she can't stand the sight of me. She told me so herself." The voice became plaintive. "I tell you, she never set eyes on me before that night at Mario's. She was dining with that fella Carmody, and he went out and I came over and introduced myself. No harm in that, was there?" Pilbeam began to fear asphyxiation. The air inside the cupboard was growing closer. Peril lent him the inspiration which it so often does. "Look here," he said, "are you Ronnie?" Ronnie turned pinker. "I don't want any of your dashed cheek. No, but listen, is your name Ronnie? Because if it is," said Pilbeam, "you're the fella she's come here to see." More silence. "Look, she told me so in the garden this evening. She came here calling herself Miss Shoemaker or some such name just to see you. That ought to show you that I'm not the man she's keen on." "What's that?" Pilbeam repeated his remark. "Come out," said Ronnie. "That's all very well, but come out. I want to talk to you. You are talking to me. Look, I don't want to bellow through this door. Come on out. I swear I won't touch you." Pilbeam emerged. His hair was rumpled, and he regarded his companion warily. But the word of the fishes held good. As far as Ronnie was concerned, the war appeared to be over. "What did you say? She's here?"
"Certainly. She got here just before I did. Haven't you seen her?"
"No."
"Well, she's here. She's in the room they call the garden room. I heard her tell that old bird Galahad so."
"And she said she'd come here to see me?"
"Yes. To explain about that night at Mario's. And what I say," proceeded Pilbeam warmly, "is, if a girl didn't love a fellow, would she come to a place like this calling herself Miss Shoebred or something simply to see him? I ask you," said Pilbeam.
Ronnie did not answer. Turning without a word, he shot out of the door as quickly as Percy Pilbeam a short while ago had shot in. And Percy Pilbeam, with a deep sigh, went to the dressing table, took up the brush, and started to restore his hair to a state fit for the eyes of the nobility and gentry. This done, he smoothed his moustache and went downstairs to the drawing room. The drawing room was empty, and to Pilbeam's surprise, it continued to be empty for quite a considerable time. The door at last opened, and Beach entered.
"A cocktail, sir?"
"Thanks." He accepted a brimming glass. He drank, and instantaneously, all through his system, beacon fires seemed to burst into being. He drained the glass. His whole outlook on life was now magically different. Quite suddenly, he had begun to feel equal to a dozen butlers, however glazed their eyes might be.
"Nice evening."
"Yes, sir."
"Nice after the storm."
"Yes, sir."
"Came down a bit, didn't it?"
"The rain was undoubtedly extremely heavy, sir."
"Another cocktail?"
"Thanks."
The relighting of the beacons had the effect of removing from Pilbeam the last trace of diffidence and shyness. He saw now that he had been entirely mistaken in this butler.
"By the way, in strict confidence, what's your name?"
"Beach, sir."
"In strict confidence, Beach, I know something about that pig."
"Indeed, sir."
"Yes. Yes, I went for a walk in the park and the rain came on and, well, I got pretty wet. In fact, I don't mind telling you, I had to get under cover and take my trousers off to dry."
He laughed merrily.
"Another cocktail, sir?"
"Making three in all?"
"Yes, sir."
"Oh, perhaps you're right," said Pilbeam.
For some moments he sat pensive and distray. Then his idly floating thoughts drifted back to the mystery which had been vexing him before this delightful butler's entry.
"I say, Beach, I've been waiting here hours and hours. Where's this dinner I heard you beating gongs about? Where is everybody?
His lordship and her ladyship and Mr. Galahad and Miss Threepwood are dining at Metringham Hall.
What, with old Pop Parslow?
With Sir Gregory Parslow Parslow, sir. Yes. Pilbeam chuckled.
Talking of old Parslow, Beach, you did say your name was Beach.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, with a capital B?
Yes, sir.
Well, talking of Parslow, Beach, I could tell you something about him. Something he's up to.
Indeed, sir, but I'm not going to.
Respect client's confidence. Slip, seal, professional secret.
Yes, sir.
As you rightly say, yes.
Any more of that stuff in that, Shaker Beach?
A little, sir, if you consider it judicious.
That's just what I do consider it. Start pouring.
The detective sipped luxuriously, fuller and fuller, every moment of an uplifting sense of well-being. He was filled with an overwhelming desire to confide in somebody.
As a matter of fact, Beach, he said, I could tell you all sorts of things about all sorts of people.
Practically everybody in this house I could tell you something about. What's the name of that chap with the light hair, for instance, the old boy's secretary?
Mr. Carmody, sir.
Carmody,
that's the name.
Well, I could tell you something about Carmody.
Indeed, sir.
Yes. I saw Carmody this afternoon when Carmody didn't see me.
Indeed, sir.
Yes.
Where is Carmody?
I imagine he will be down shortly, sir. Mr. Ronald also.
Ronald?
Pilbeam drew in his breath sharply.
There's a tough baby, Beach. Oh, that Ronnie. Do you know what he wanted to do just now?
Murder me.
And do you know why he wanted to murder me, Beach?
I couldn't say, sir. Well, of course you couldn't. How could you? You don't know.
That's why I'm telling you.
Well, now listen.
He is in love with a girl in the chorus at the Regal. A girl named Sue Brown. And he thought I had been taking her out to dinner.
That is why he wanted to murder me, Beach.
Indeed, sir.
The butler spoke calmly, but he was deeply stirred. He had always flattered himself that the inmates of Blanding Castle kept few secrets from him, but this was something new.
Yes, I had the dickens of a job holding him off, I can tell you. Do you know what saved me, Beach?
No, sir.
Presence of mind. I put it to him, to Ronnie. I put it to Ronnie as a reasonable man. If this girl loved me, would she have come to this place pretending to be Miss Shoemaker? Simply so as to see him?
Sir?
Yes. That's who Miss Shoemaker is, Beach. She is a chorus girl called Sue Brown, and she's come here to see Ronnie.
Beach stood transfixed. His eyes swelled bulbously from their sockets. He was incapable of even an indeed, sir. He was still endeavouring to assimilate this extraordinary revelation when Hugo Carmody entered the room.
Ah, said Hugo, his eye falling on Pilbeam. Leave us, Beach, he said in a grave, deep voice.
The butler came out of his trance.
Sir, pop off.
Very good, sir. The door closed.
I've been looking for you, viper, said Hugo.